The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in.
It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters, and I'm Dominic Chu in for Frank Holland today, and here's your 5 at 5. Coming in hot, investors still digesting yesterday's hotter-than-expected inflation report and what it means for Powell's policy playbook in the months ahead. Stock futures in a holding pattern to close out the week as technology looks to do something for the first time since October. Meanwhile, in China, Beijing not giving up without a fight after former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says he's looking for ways to buy TikTok from ByteDance. Plus, a rare showing of confidence for Boeing from one major airline CEO. His comments coming up in a CNBC exclusive. And then later on, the stock that could replace Tesla in the Magnificent Seven and why today may be the opportunity to get in at a discount price. It is Friday, March 15th, 2024, and you are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning and welcome to Worldwide Exchange. Thank you for being with us on this Friday morning. Let's kick off the hour with a check on U.S. equity futures after the Dow's first down day in four on the back of that hotter than expected PPI report. Right now, futures are indicating a very modest open. The Dow is implied just higher by 4 points, the S&P up by 3 points, and the Nasdaq down by roughly 8. Very, very steady for the time being. Heading into the final trading day of the week, the major averages are still holding on to thinner gains overall. If you take a look at so far the week-to-date chart, 0.5% gain there for the Dow, S&P similar move, and a slight 0.25% gain discount to the broader market overall for the Nasdaq Composite Index. Now, you have to kind of not so far for the large cap Nasdaq 100 overall, on pace for its first back-to-back weekly loss since going all the way back to October. We just mentioned that. Checking on bond market yields right now, take a look at what's happening with the benchmark 10-year note yield, slightly lower, but still 4.28%, a decent move higher over the last couple of weeks. The 2-year note yield ticking slightly higher to just a hair below 4.7%, and then 4.418% for the 30-year long bond as well. Taking a look at oil prices, check out what's happening with U.S. benchmark West Texas Intermediate, or WTI crude, currently $80.63, off about 0.75%. Similar percentage move for ICE Brent crude futures, the world benchmark gauge, $84.78 there. Meanwhile, gasoline futures currently at $2.69, down 0.25%. A very wild week for Bitcoin, but still setting records and hovering just above that 67,000 mark. Now, remember, we were well above 70,000 just in the last couple of days. 66,009, we'll call it 67,000 right now, down about 3.5%. But still, take a look over the last week. Very much a roller coaster ride for the largest of the cryptocurrencies. Turning now to the action overseas and some breaking news out of Japan, our Steve Sedgwick joins now from London with the latest there. Good Friday morning, Steve.
Good Friday morning to you. Dom, I want to rip up the top of your show. I want to call it 6 at 5 because you said something that was coming in hot. I'll tell you what's coming hot, and that's Japanese wages. The so-called Shunto round is where all the big Japanese companies negotiate with the unions and they come up with the wage increases for the year ahead. All the big companies such as Nissan, such as Panasonic. These have come in so hot. In fact, they're the hottest figure we've seen in 33 years, Dom. They've come in up 5.3% wages. Now, where the rest of the central banks, the Fed, the ECB, the Bank of England, they want, obviously, salaries to come down so they can cut interest rates. What they want in Japan, get a load of this, they want them to go up. They want wages to be high. And my goodness me, they've got it. Because they want to raise rates. I know it's like the world's on its head. Because Japan is the only place, the Bank of Japan is the only place where we've still got negative interest rates, negative 0.1%. Ultra loose monetary policy, which which means the yen's been under so much pressure. Viewers, take a look at the yen versus the dollar over the last 2 years. It has plummeted. The dollar has rallied. And that's meant the stock market has gone through the roof because all those exporters are getting such gorgeous terms of trade. But in the meantime, the bonds, we were looking at the hot data out of the US in terms of the PPI and the CPI earlier in the week. Well, my goodness me, the Japanese 10-year paper trades at 0.8% as opposed to the US 10-year at what, 4.2, 4.3 at the moment as well. And it trades so low because it's also got something called YCC, yield curve control, which caps it at pretty much at a reference point of 1% as well. So the world's turning on its head. The Japanese want higher wages. They want to get the rates out of negative territory, and they may well do it next week, Dom, on the 18th and the 19th. It's the absolutely pivotal meeting of the Bank of Japan. Back to you, my friend.
All right, Stephen Sedgwick there in London with the latest there. Thank you very much, sir. Turning now to the chip sector. In a news alert from Washington, D.C., Bloomberg is reporting that the U.S. plans to add more than $6 billion to Samsung Electronics to help it expand beyond an already planned $25 billion project in Taylor, Texas. Not just Samsung, though, sources telling CNBC the White House is also looking at extending funds in the forms of grants and loans from its CHIPS Act to Intel. With an announcement from Commerce coming as soon as next week, Intel and the Commerce Department declining to comment on that. Now, Intel has been seeking funds to expand plants in Ohio and Arizona, two states that also happen to be, of course, key swing states for the administration in the upcoming election. So keep an eye on that. Let's get a check now on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Silvana Henao is here with those. Silvana, good morning.
Hey, Dom. Good Friday morning to you. The CEO of Cleveland Cliffs says his company would consider another bid with union support for U.S. Steel should its deal with Japan's Nippon Steel fall through. Speaking with Bloomberg, Lorenzo Gonsalves says any bid would also be at a much lower price point. In a statement, Nippon says it remains set on closing a deal with U.S. Steel as it, quote, delivers clear benefits to union workers and the American steel industry. Lyft and Uber say they will cease operations in Minneapolis after the city's council voted to require ride-hailing services to increase driver wages to the equivalent local minimum wage of $15.57 an hour. Lyft calls the ordinance, quote, deeply flawed and makes operations unsustainable. And the Chinese government is reportedly signaling it will not allow a forced sale of ByteDance's TikTok after the House earlier this week passed a bill that would force it to do so, with the Wall Street Journal reporting it would prefer an outright ban instead. Now, this coming after former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin on our air yesterday said he's working on a deal of his own for the social media platform.
I think the legislation should pass, and I think it should be sold. I understand the technology. It's a great business, and I'm going to put together a group to buy TikTok.
You're trying to buy TikTok.
I am, because this should be owned by U.S. businesses. There's no way that the Chinese would ever let a U.S. company own something like this in China.
Mnuchin adding that he doesn't think TikTok should be shut down, Dom.
All right, Silvana Henao, thank you very much for the headlines there. Turning back to the trading day ahead after yesterday's hotter-than-expected PPI report and what our next guest says is an alarm for the Federal Reserve. Ben Emmons is a senior portfolio manager and head of fixed income at New Edge Wealth. He joins me now on set. Ben, thank you very much for being here with us. Let's talk about that hotter-than-expected wholesale-slash-business-level inflation report, if you will. Just how much did that reset the Fed and maybe the market's expectations for what things could look like in the coming months?
I think it did, Dom, because, you know, this was not only hotter on the headline and showed a lot of energy pressure there, price pressure, but you're looking inside the number, you actually see how the government has an effect on the economy, because, you know, it buys goods, it buys services. So speaking to those plants that they're giving grants to, now that's all coming through the PPI data. So the what we call disinflation that we've had for PPI has reversed back, curling up to inflation. So I think the Fed's looking at this is an economy that's getting traction with more demand. And then you cannot cut into that strengthening demand, because if you do, you actually infuse even more demand, right? So I think the Fed is going to stay on hold, maybe a little bit longer than what people have thought.
What are the markets saying right now, both on the bond side and the stock, the equity side, with regard to where they think rates could be going forward? The markets have been pretty resilient on the stock side of things, and even on the bond side of things as well, though the 10 years back up to 4.29.
Yeah, I think that the 10-year should be a little higher because if we're not going to get any rate cuts.
Higher to what, though? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be more like 4.5 to 4.75 range because that reflects more of a Fed that's going to stay longer here for holds to be sure that we're not getting an overheated economy. But yet we're having a strong economy, so the stock market, you know, appreciates that. And therefore, rising yields and rising stock prices can coexist.
Now, is the recessionary narrative that the market has been putting out there relatively more robust now than it was? Do we feel as though an economic downturn is becoming more likely?
I would say it's actually less likely because, you know, we're having investment in the economy that continues to show surprises in these data points, like PPI as an example. So I actually think the recession narrative is not correct. In fact, you could actually make a case that next year may not be either because whomever's going to be president, more stimulus will be coming, right? Either one of them will look for something to push the economy. So this economy is in a pretty strong trend here. So the recession is not going to happen, in my view.
So what's the play? Where do you go? Where does the money go? Because the recession is pretty much, in your mind, off the table for the time being.
So we're in the rotation idea. You know, if the semiconductors have had such a strong run as a reflection of investment in the economy, you're going to see that spill over to energy, to financials, to healthcare. Those type of sectors are going to benefit. To NVIDIA's earnings, right? Their technology showing up in those sectors. So we like those. And in addition, like interest rates should be somewhat higher. So you don't want to be, you know, at the overweight of the 30-year bond, for example. Stay more in the shorter end. So you play that versus being overweight those sectors, I think you do well.
All right. Ben Emmons with the trade there. Thank you very much. Have a nice weekend, Ben.
Thank you.
All right. For more on what's driving the markets and the trading day ahead, head over to CNBC Pro over at cnbc.com/pro for exclusive insights and analysis there for subscribers. We've got a lot more here to come on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, can Disney do it twice? After its pandemic success with Hamilton, will Taylor Swift be able to move the needle for the bottom line of Disney Plus? Plus, call it a beauty breakdown, why shares of Ulta are falling ahead of the opening bell. And later on, a rare showing of confidence for Boeing from one major airline's CEO. His comments coming up in a CNBC exclusive interview. We've got a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns after this commercial break.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back. We've got a market flash for you right now. The FDA is approving a drug from Madrigal Pharmaceuticals as the first treatment for NASH liver disease. Madrigal says that the drug will be available in April, but has not announced how much it will cost. Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly are currently testing if their weight loss drugs could treat that NASH. So Madrigal shares up 23% in the pre-market trade. Well, Taylor Swift has sold out stadiums worldwide, ruled the box office with her concert film, and now has brought a special exclusive edition of the Eras Tour to Disney+. Taylor's version began streaming last night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, if you're a true Swiftie, you've just finished watching it all the way through for a second time. So welcome to Worldwide Exchange. Takes that long, apparently. Landing the Eras Tour was a major win for Disney, which paid a reported $75 million for those streaming rights. But will it be enough to move the needle when it comes to subscriber growth? Let's now bring in Alex Weprin, media and business writer for The Hollywood Reporter. Alex, thank you very much for being here. This is big for Disney+. It's a huge, it's actually basically a cultural revolution of sorts for Taylor Swift and what's happening right now. So is this going to be the catalyst that Disney needs to get Disney Plus subscribers going again?
Yeah, I mean, look, Taylor Swift is the biggest thing in entertainment, arguably the biggest thing in the world in entertainment. So I think that the Eras Tour movie is the sort of thing that can absolutely drive new subscribers for Disney Plus at a time when they really need to add new subscribers. And just as importantly, it's the sort of thing that as all these streaming services, Disney Plus included, move to add advertising to the service, it'll keep people watching for hours. So it's kind of exactly the right content at the right time. It's not cheap. The reports are it costs about $75 million to bring it to Disney Plus, but it's absolutely the sort of thing they need to kind of drive growth at a time when they really need it.
I mean, Alex, it's been spoken about for a long time now with regard to streaming that the way you get people on there is to do live events. This is not a live event. It's like a live-ish event, right? You get to see the concert. You kind of feel like you're there, but it's not going on right now. Is this going to be the new model? Could we see live and live-ish events across more of these streaming platforms? Is it not just Disney Plus, but everybody else as well that has to get on this train?
Yeah, I mean, if you'll excuse the pun, you know, I think we kind of are entering a new era of the streaming wars here where they need to drive kind of event programming. Whether that is literally live programming like Netflix's upcoming boxing fight between Jake Paul and Mike Tyson, or just kind of a live, you know, event-ish programming like the Eras Tour movie, streaming services need to have something to really engage people, give them a reason to subscribe and a reason to stick around. So I think that we're going to see a lot more of this going forward. In fact, you know, Peacock, they had their first NFL playoff game a couple months ago. That's exactly the sort of thing that we're looking at here.
And of course, Peacock is owned by our parent company here at CNBC, NBC Universal. Now, Alex, one last thing. If you take a look at trend-wise, what's happening with these streaming platforms, can you handicap for us the types of moves that the major ones will have to make? We know that the live and live-ish programming, Taylor Swift, Eras Tour, that sort of thing, is part of the mix right now. But what does Paramount need to do? And what does Netflix need to do? And what do all of these streaming platforms want to kind of get done with regard to the actual content that we're going to see in the coming months and quarters?
Well, they're going to have to balance like rationalizing their content spend. So realizing how much entertainment content do you really need on the platform? While also trying to invest in event type programming that's going to bring people to the service. So it's going to be a real balancing act here, because I do think in the long run, we're going to see content spend kind of come down a little bit, but we are going to see more of a shift. So maybe a little less, you know, scripted dramas, scripted comedies, maybe more, you know, boxing, a little more NFL if they can make it happen, more event type programming like the Eras Tour, as these companies kind of rationalize where they spend their money on content and the balance of all those types of programming.
All right. So the narrative is now economic rationalization versus the blank checks that we saw early on in streaming. Alex Weprin, thank you very much. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Head on Worldwide Exchange. We head out to La La Land, where the likes of OpenAI, Gemini Copilot, and more are getting their proverbial stars on the Walk of Fame despite ongoing industry pushback. Our Julia Boorstin takes a closer look at that story coming up.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Welcome back. I'm Frances Rivera with your NBC News headlines. Overnight, deadly storms tore across the Midwest, knocking out power to tens of thousands and bringing tornadoes and massive hail. At least two people were killed in Ohio. A hospital in Winchester, Indiana, says at least 39 people were admitted overnight, and officials say up to half of the buildings in nearby Selma may have been damaged. James Crumbly, the father of school shooter Ethan Crumbly, has been found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. A Michigan jury found that Crumbly was negligent for failing to prevent the rampage that killed four students in November of 2021. His wife, Jennifer, was found guilty on the same charges. Both will be sentenced in April and face up to 15 years in prison. Their son is currently serving a life sentence without the possibility of parole. Alec Baldwin has asked a judge to dismiss involuntary manslaughter charges. Defense attorneys say in a new court filing that prosecutors unfairly stacked the deck against Baldwin. The motion says the grand jury received inaccurate and one-sided testimony about the revolver involved in the fatal shooting on the set of Rust. Baldwin has pleaded not guilty. Don, we send it back to you with those Friday headlines.
All right, Frances Rivera, thank you very much for the headlines there. Time now for your big money movers. Shares of Ulta Beauty are falling. The specialty retailer's fourth quarter sales rose by 10%, beating forecasts. But Ulta is projecting full-year earnings below analyst estimates and says it sees a slowdown in the industry. The company is dealing with softer sales of makeup and hair care products. PagerDuty is tumbling today, the cloud computing company's fourth quarter results just edging past forecasts. But first quarter sales are expected to come in below estimates. While management has seen strong momentum from mid-market and enterprise customers, they still see headwinds from small business ones. PagerDuty shares down roughly 8% pre-market. Zumiez reporting better than expected fourth quarter earnings, but the stock is falling as the retailer's first quarter guidance is well below analysts' expectations. While the company saw strong sales in North America, it says the global environment is still challenging and it's adjusting accordingly, including slowing some store sales, including slowing growth in some stores in Europe. That's a tongue twister right there. Zumiez down about 4.5%. Turning now to artificial intelligence in Hollywood, since OpenAI launched its Sora image generation tool, filmmaker Tyler Perry is warning it would hurt the industry, which is still recovering from strikes that dragged on over fears about AI taking jobs. Our Julia Boorstin joins us now with a look at the latest on AI's impact on the entertainment business.
Hollywood studios are testing new AI tools to help cut costs and to speed up workflow. After the fear of AI taking writers and actors' jobs dragged out the strikes last year, the market for generative AI in media and entertainment is expected to grow from $1.7 billion this year to $11.5 billion by 2032. Pika, which has raised $55 million, is an AI-powered platform that enables users to turn text and images into videos with a range of styles and to edit them, to change someone's clothing or to add another character. It just announced the ability to generate audio for its videos. A leader in this space, Runway, is valued at $1.5 billion with backing from Google, NVIDIA, Salesforce, and others. It recently added features to give creators control over movements within shots and to adjust the positioning of the camera in AI-generated video.
You have a shot of something you've created, allowing you to control and define really precisely and almost at a pixel level how you want that camera to be position or control or move becomes really important. And that's exactly what camera control allows you to do.
Runway's Cristobal says storyboards or art direction that would have taken weeks can now be made in minutes. And it's not just video generation. Studios are exploring all the ways to use AI, from summarizing and analyzing scripts to helping design sets or costumes to editing and visual effects. New technology and innovations also bring concerns. IATSE, the union representing Hollywood crews, is proposing protections for jobs that could be threatened by AI, and they're considering a strike. But sources at studios tell us they believe AI can create new jobs to meet the need for 3D rendering actors and props to achieve more sophisticated visual effects.
All right, thank you very much for Julia Boorstin for that report. Coming up on the show, the stock that could replace Tesla in the Magnificent Seven and why today may be the opportunity to get in at a discount price. And as CNBC celebrates Women's Heritage Month, we are sharing the stories of some of our newly named CNBC Changemakers, an annual list of 50 women who are innovating and transforming the business world. As we head to break, here is Element Biosciences co-founder and CEO Molly Heath.
When changemakers can challenge the status quo, they will meet adversity. So I think that changemaker will have to be driven by a profound higher purpose to bring great benefits to human society. Only then the changemakers can motivate themselves and transcend these kind of adversity into motivations.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Dominic Chu in for Frank Holland on this Friday morning. Let's pick up the half hour with a check on U.S. stock futures. The Dow snapping its three-day winning streak just yesterday. And right now, we're searching for some direction. Right now, the Dow's implied higher by 34, the S&P higher by 6, and the Nasdaq higher by just about 1 point right now. We're preparing to wrap up the trading week, and the Dow, the S&P, and the Nasdaq are all holding on to thin gains at this point right now, all up roughly 1/2 to about 0.25% in that range. So keep an eye on those thin positive markets. Also, Bitcoin prices continuing to test new highs this week, but pulling back from those levels right now, currently at 67,091. That's down roughly 3.25%. One stock weighing on sentiment this morning is Adobe, falling double digits right now on soft revenue guidance. The weaker forecast is overshadowing an otherwise strong quarter as investments in artificial intelligence continue to pay off. Now, CEO Shantanu Narayen praised Adobe's tremendous advances in AI just on CNBC yesterday.
I think the research that exists as it relates to text to video is incredible, not just what OpenAI has done with Sora, but Adobe as well. And I look at, you know, the tremendous advances that we've made in text to video, not only as it relates to the models, but also embedding that within Premiere Pro.
Well, despite Adobe's move lower today, it's certainly outperforming. As you can see, there at least one, call it questionable, member of the Magnificent Seven so far, and that's Tesla. Over the course of the past year, up more than 50% compared to Tesla's nearly 10% drop. Tesla, by the way, is hovering near a 10-month low following two downgrades, one from UBS and one from Wells Fargo, citing slower EV demand and production as well. With Tesla now the worst performer in that so-called Magnificent Seven, could it be time for another name to take its place? Let's ask Alex Kantrowitz, big technology founder and CNBC contributor as well. Alex, it seems a little weird to talk about the Magnificent Seven without Tesla, but there's a good reason. Some folks say that Tesla is just not performing the way the other Mag 7 stocks are. But should we be kicking out Tesla? Is it too early to make that call?
It does seem a little bit early, but I wouldn't fully be opposed to having, instead of a Magnificent Seven, a Super Six, right? We do know that Tesla is going to have rough times ahead, not only with the discounts and, you know, potentially flat growth, but you look at where the story's gone. The story's gone from the EV story with Elon Musk to artificial intelligence, put NVIDIA in there, right? And it's going to be tough for Tesla to have both fundamental issues and then also the story issue. So if we want to go Super Six instead of Magnificent Seven, I'm all for it.
Now, we just spoke about Adobe and what's happening there. Adobe has been the beneficiary, of course, of all of this AI buzz. The creative suite for people who use their products has been a huge driver of the growth there at Adobe. Is Adobe one of those stocks that could maybe be that stealth next Magnificent Seven type stock?
Yeah, Adobe's definitely impressive. Of course, it beat earnings, but they also had sluggish expectations for this quarter. And that's a concern, right? Because they're not seeing the type of new revenue that they were expecting, right? The guidance was almost entirely about not seeing as much growth as they were going to expect in the creative business, right? So I think Adobe doesn't really have this Magnificent Seven, Super Six type of aura, right? Because it's a one-trick pony. Now, it's a great trick, right? But it's all about creative services. Or Netflix, for instance. Why isn't Netflix in there? It's, again, one trick. It's all about, you know, watching movies on the internet. These other companies, think about NVIDIA. They're platform companies. They enable people to build on top of their technology. Their technology touches everywhere, everybody. But in Adobe, just a certain segment of society. Yes, we all see the output of Photoshop and Illustrator and all the other software, but it's a certain segment of the population. That's why I'd be hesitant to include it.
But Alex, do investors and do folks out there care about any other tricks than AI these days? That seems to be the only thing driving the narrative among many of these big technology, mega cap technology companies.
It doesn't seem like they care about anything outside of AI these days. But just because AI is the trend doesn't mean that any company that touches AI has to be included in this super growth. I mean, Adobe also already has, you know, fairly high multiple. And the company, you know, again, like, this is going to be incremental for its designers as opposed to revolutionary, right? Now, it's going to be very cool if you're using Photoshop and you can type in a prompt or you can select something and use image generation to fill it in. That's amazing. But is that going to drive that many new licenses in Adobe? Is it going to create that many new designers that have to use Photoshop as opposed to potentially driving them to new programs where they can type in prompts and create images that way? That's the big question on Adobe. And that's why, even though AI is a big part of its story, I'm hesitant to say, okay, it's going to the moon like the others have.
All right. The Adobe trade versus what's happening with Tesla and others is going to be one to watch. Alex Kantrowitz, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend, sir.
Thank you, Dom.
All right, after what's been a rough week and year for shares of Boeing, now down more than 25% since that mid-air Alaska Airlines door plug blowout back in early January, a rare vote of confidence from at least one major airline CEO. Now, speaking exclusively with CNBC, the new CEO of Qatar Airways telling our own Dan Murphy he has full confidence in the plane maker despite its latest misfires.
I know Airbus and Boeing have certain problems. We have full trust in both organizations that they're strong enough to overcome those problems. We have continuous meetings with them. We always sit and discuss the issues that we're facing, and they always come back to us with solutions. Solutions that they're able to implement, and we see the result of those solutions. I'll give you a very simple example. We were supposed to receive two aircrafts on a certain date. Airbus just communicated with us recently that they're able to deliver it earlier than the schedule. So again, this shows that those two companies are strong enough to overcome the problems they're facing today.
You're a key customer. Have you had a conversation with Dave Calhoun about what's going on over at Boeing?
We never stop communicating with our friends in Boeing and Airbus. Again, it is an issue. It is a problem. I'll take you back in the history a few years ago. 7-8, the Dreamliner had the same issues, had the same, basically, the history repeats itself. Look at the 7-8 now. It's one of the best aircrafts in the industry. It's one of the best aircrafts operating in our fleet. So I'm sure they will overcome the problems they're facing currently with the MAXs, and it's only about time. Let us give them time to make sure that the solution they have will cater for the safety of our passengers, and I'm certain that they're capable to do so.
You're confident Boeing makes safe planes?
110%.
All right, vote of confidence in Boeing there. Turning now to the commercial real estate market and concerns in that sector, Goldman Sachs is head of its real estate team revealing the bank plans to resume, quote, actively investing in commercial properties in the U.S. this year, adding that he sees a buying opportunity. The comments come as Brookfield Asset Management executives called the U.S., quote, the most oversupplied office market in the world and said investors had taken on too much debt. Both of those remarks follow Fed Chairman Jay Powell's warning during congressional testimony last week of a wave of likely bank failures stemming from the commercial real estate industry's struggles. So let's get more on where the sector stands with an insider, Hissam Nagy, the CEO and president of Marcus & Millichap, one of the largest real estate financing firms in the U.S. You have a pulse on things. Hissam, thank you very much for being here with us.
Good morning, Dom. Great to be here.
Well, this is a debate. We've got the bull and the bears kind of coming out there, although I would say that there are folks out there like Brookfield who have a good amount of exposure to that market. So they have some weight. Where do you stand on this? How good or bad is the commercial real estate market right now?
Well, you've quoted two of our clients and the types of institutions we do business well with all the time. And the book is being judged by its cover. Office space is one reality. Within office space, older, lower quality assets in urban areas is one story, and the rest of the office market is another story. The banking system has an overall total exposure to office loans that equate to about 3.5%. So the coverage on the risk side of commercial real estate is so broad that it's creating this overall negative impression. You look at multifamily properties, they're operating very well. A little bit of softening, a little bit of oversupply, but solid fundamentals. Self-storage, hospitality, shopping centers have all staged either a great recovery, like in the shopping center example, or have had really good supply-demand conditions. It's really the concentration of older office buildings because of the hybrid work environment that is under true distress. The rest of commercial real estate isn't really under distress.
Is there a case to be made? Is there a reason why the focus is on that part of the market that could be a potential downfall? And the reason why is because many times in history, it's been kind of like that unseen factor or that piece of the market that people aren't necessarily saying is going to be a big deal that could cascade into a bigger deal down the line.
Contagion is the concern. The total exposure to the obsolete portion of the office market is so small that we don't anticipate that contagion to become a problem for the industry or for the banking system. What is happening is the mark-to-market on the true obsolete assets, and those mark-to-markets are significant. The rest of the business is being repriced because of interest rates. And a year ago, we were both concerned about interest rate increases and whether the economy was going to go into recession or not. Today, we know the Fed is getting very close to an easing cycle, maybe a little bit longer than we anticipated, but we're getting there. And we have much more confidence that the economy is not going to fall off a cliff. That's why you're hearing from various institutional investors that it's the time to buy. Prices have adjusted. There's record capital on the sideline. And when you combine those two with the confidence that the economy is going to hold up pretty well, you're going to see capital come back into
commercial. Where are you seeing the client conversations that you're having right now? Where are you seeing the most interest in where that opportunity lies within commercial real estate?
Fascinating to see the demand for shopping centers and retail in general at the highest level in 25 years, both from a tenant perspective and from an investor perspective. By the way, we're the largest investment brokerage firm in North America, as well as financing, which you mentioned. And we're seeing demand for multifamily and shopping centers come back very strongly this year, followed by good quality office space in suburban markets. There are many metros around the country where you have sub 15% office vacancies. And that's a contrarian play we're seeing more and more of.
All right, Hessam Nagy with the State of Commercial Real Estate.
Great to see you, Dom.
Thank you very much. Always good to see you. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks.
All right. Well, coming up on the show, shares of Rivian are getting juiced ahead of the opening bell today. We've got the reason why coming up next. Stock's up 4%. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your morning call sheet. Piper Sandler is upgrading its rating and price target on Rivian, moving it to overweight and a $21 per share target. Piper says that investors should take more bullish stance on the company, thanks in part to excitement around its newly unveiled R2 and R3 models. Citi is out with a price target increase on Micron shares ahead of their earnings report next week, moving it to $95 from $150 per share, saying it expects upside in the results and guidance, thanks to what else? Booming demand for AI. So watch that price target upping there. And then Guggenheim raising its rating on Snowflake, moving it to neutral. Guggenheim saying that the company still faces a mountain of challenges, even if it remains just a strong cloud-based data warehouse vendor with little additional penetration. It still remains a valuable asset. Snowflake shares on the rise this morning as well. Time now for your global briefing. Workers at Japan's largest trade union are set to receive a more than 5% pay increase. That's the biggest in more than three decades. The robust wage growth is expected to influence the Bank of Japan's discussions around negative interest rates at next week's policy meeting. Analysts are forecasting the first rate hike in decades to come later on in April. Argentina's Senate is rejecting President Javier Milei's emergency call to deregulate the economy. The plan, which was announced back in December, would have slashed red tape and eliminated more than 300 regulations on areas like rent, food companies, air travel, and land ownership as well. The rejection comes as Milei struggles to bring his radical vision for the country's struggling economy to life. And Foxconn shares are jumping after the company reported a 33% increase in fourth quarter profits. Guidance also coming in stronger thanks to surging demand for artificial intelligence servers. The upbeat outlook contrasts with previous remarks from Foxconn's chairman in November, who warned of relative, conservative, and neutral expectations for 2024. Well, ahead of the one word that everyone needs to know today, plus it's our next guest who's warning, beware the Ides of March, the three catalysts she's tracking that could fuel fresh volatility in the markets today. And if you haven't already done so, please follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, you can check us out on Apple or Spotify or your podcast app or platform of choice. Worldwide Exchange in audio format. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your WEX wrap-up. Cleveland Cliffs CEO says he'd consider another bid for U.S. Steel if its current deal with Nippon Steel falls apart. The one caveat is the offer price would have to be significantly lower than Nippon's. Uber and Lyft will shut down operations in Minneapolis after the city said it will require all ride-sharing services to raise drivers' wages, Lyft calling the move deeply flawed as it makes operations unsustainable. The Chinese government suggesting it won't allow a forced sale of TikTok, reportedly signaling to parent company ByteDance it would rather have the app be banned in the U.S. than be sold off. This after former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin on our air just yesterday said he's putting together an investor group to look at buying the app. Bloomberg is reporting the U.S. plans to award more than $6 billion to Samsung Electronics to help it expand beyond an already planned $25 billion project in Taylor, Texas. Meanwhile, sources telling CNBC the White House is also looking at extending funds in the form of grants and loans from its CHIPS Act to Intel, with an announcement from Commerce Department coming as soon as next week. And the Wall Street Journal says Boeing 787 plunge on a flight to New Zealand earlier this week was likely caused by a mishap in the cockpit, user error, not a mechanical failure. Officials believe a flight attendant hit a switch on the pilot's seat, pushing the pilot into the controls and onto the plane's nose. And investors sounding off over Kevin Plank's return as Under Armour's CEO, the stock working to recoup some of yesterday's losses after dropping by some 12%. Well, the stocks are now fighting to close out the week with a marginal gain, digging deeper into the markets right now and what the options market may be signaling. Let's bring in Amy Wu Silverman, head of derivative strategy at RBC Capital Markets. Amy, thank you for joining us on this Friday morning. Let's talk about whether or not this is going to be a big deal, a big day for markets, given it is the middle, the Friday in a month of March. Could that so-called witching happen this afternoon be a real catalyst for trading today?
Well, good morning, Dom. Not only is it options expiration today, it's actually the Ides of March, which usually signals doom and gloom. And it's interesting because I would say the options market continue to signal the opposite. There is a lot of volatility. It's just all, you know, centered in the upside. This focus on up crash is something we've really seen. And we continue to see that positive momentum being something the options market is flagging.
There is something interesting developing right now in that many folks are using options more these days than they have over the course of the last several months. What do you think is triggering this wave of interest in options trading? And where specifically are you seeing the most action? What types of stocks and sectors when it comes to that options trading volume?
You know, the most historic increases we've seen are in your AI names, your NVIDIAs. And to answer your other question, why do we continue to see this? Because it's been working for those folks. You've continued to see those call options. Obviously, if you had been long them, be very, very popular because they just have been working. And that continues the cycle, this positive momentum that we've seen and really put this into the public consciousness.
Where exactly is the most heat? Where is the most action coming from? You mentioned those semiconductor type names, the ones that are doing pretty well. Are you seeing any kind of surge in volume elsewhere in the market besides some of those names like NVIDIA or AMD or others?
So it's interesting. I think the most common question we get these days isn't, you know, what should I hedge with the market up so much? It's what are the adjacent names to your NVIDIAs and your AMDs, as you mentioned? And one quantitative way we think about this is just simply to say, okay, let's just take the 1,000 largest companies and let's look at where their call demand is outweighing their put demand. You know, we can begin this analysis being very agnostic to what the companies are. But what you see when you take a look at the top 50 names where that call demand is outweighing the put demand is it is mostly in the semis. But actually, you have some crypto names thrown in there, too, as well as trading platforms. So a Robinhood, a Coinbase, they're all up there as well with an AMD, an NVIDIA, a Marvell, and a Micron.
Do you treat, from a strategy standpoint, Amy, do you treat the crypto sentiment that we're seeing right now to or akin to what's happening with artificial intelligence? I guess, in other words, are you looking at some of these sentiment and technical indicators similarly when it comes to AI versus crypto?
It's a great question. And I kind of know what you're getting at in terms of that essence, which is you do feel that frenzy in both those pockets. It does feel like the same kind of trading. One thing I will say is this comes back to retail being a very, very important instrument now in the derivatives market. This is sort of a post-COVID thing that happened. I would say it kicked off with GameStop and AMC, but it certainly hasn't gone away. And a lot of the wealth effect you see created in cryptocurrency, I certainly can see flowing back into the AI side. I think that's a question that we've seen a lot. And there certainly is an undercurrent of that that makes sense.
All right, Amy Wu Silverman at RBC, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend.
You too.
All right. Keep it right here. Squawk Box is coming up next. We'll see you on Monday.
You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.